It is. No, that's not the right one. Hello, test. 1, 2, 3. Why am I not getting anything? Hello, there we go. There we go. All right, it is Super Tuesday. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, with Bill Newell. And a lot to talk about today here on Connections, a lot to do. And we'll have our usual stellar interviews coming up here in just a few minutes. We will be talking with Karen Bell, who is the chair of the Gloucester Democratic City Committee. We'll also be checking in Boston to the Reverend Vernon Walker, who is the policy director for the Young Democrats of Massachusetts. Later on, we'll be talking with Joe Spina. Bill Newell will be talking with Joe about his observations on Super Tuesday, etc. And Josh Arnold will also be checking in with John Ronan. The Reverend Ronan is a longtime host of a popular cable television show here in Gloucester and on Cape Ann called The Writer's Block. Many people have been on that program, and it's been around for 30 years. And so Josh will be chatting with John Ronan. First of all, though, let's bring in Bill Newell. Morning, Bill.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, Super Tuesday. I just ducked outside, and I can't believe it's 60 degrees here on Cape Ann.
Man, well, yeah, it looks like a beautiful day. There's some snow in the forecast possibly for Saturday or something or other, but who knows? We'll see if that's possible, you know what I mean? Yeah, Super Tuesday, make sure you do get out and vote. Polls are open in Massachusetts until 8 o'clock tonight. I'm trying to think, what a beautiful weather. Hey, one thing we could mention is we had it in the news just a moment ago. Jack Welch, the GE CEO, made big waves in business, but he was born in Salem. You know, he gave, I think originally he gave the lights to Salem High School years ago, the for night football, to Bertram Field, and put the money towards that. He probably had a ton of money. He probably could have built a lot of fields, but he built the one field, but or helped with the lights, if I'm not mistaken on that piece. But anyways, worked at the GE in Lynn, which was probably at that time a much bigger facility than it is today, but still very active today. But anyways, he passed away at 84 on Sunday.
I think everybody worked at the GE at one time or another, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, it was all over the place. I mean, it was huge. I mean, they had plants in Everett, huge one in Pittsfield. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think I was in Pittsfield. I was in Pittsfield, to be honest with you, believe it or not, Rick, maybe about a month or two ago. And
why?
I think it's not there anymore, but I was around, and I'm thinking this must have been where GE was in Pittsfield. But and if it is there, I apologize, but I'm sure it's not as big as it once was. It was once a big facility, another one for the GE.
Yeah, very cool. The other thing, I'm trying to think here, stories of impact. There's all kinds of stuff there. By the way, there's a young lady from Gloucester. She's a 16-year-old, and she's going on to the International DECA competition somewhere. I don't know where. I think it's in Tennessee. Her name is, she's a sophomore, Eliana Faria, and I think I might have had her dad if it's Jamie. She'll be going to the Worldwide Business Competition for DECA, which is a high school program, the International Distributive Education Clubs of America. And I'm trying to see here. It's in today's Gloucester Times, story written by Taylor Ann Bradford. And I thought I read that it was in, yeah, it's in Nashville, Tennessee. And she'll be joining more than 20,000 high school students, advisors, business persons, and alumni at DECA's International Career Development Conference. 20,000 kids in Nashville coming up. Holy rollies. In April.
that's a big thing. I think they had a big thing this past weekend on that. Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. The other thing, too, we've done a number of different things on the hands-free driving law. Not hands off the wheel, but mm-hmm. hands off your electronic device in the car. And there was a guy that over the weekend, Sunday, that was driving by a police officer with the phone right in his face, and the police stopped him. But then they found out he not only had the phone next to him, so had some guns and some drugs and for distribution. And But for anybody, even if you're in a nefarious occupation, you may want to keep that phone down for the police, as they are on the lookout right now. But again, we're kind of in the transition period here. But do watch out for that.
Hey, a quick question on that. You know, the hands-free, they don't want you texting. But if you get a call, can you take the call, or you not even can't even do that?
Not if you don't have the Bluetooth. No, you're not supposed to hold the phone and talk on it. And texting is a no-no. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I have a button right on my steering wheel that allows me to answer the phone. I think most cars after what 2012 or something like that probably have that.
Well, if you have the Bluetooth, not all cars have that. You're right, though. But and we've talked about it. But it's obviously, you know, and now in this day and age, it's a great feature to have. I mean, and you know, there's so many things to distract you. You know.
That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And driving, yeah.
Well, Bill, we've got some experts coming up regarding the Super Tuesday, but also what the Democrats are planning here on the North Shore and, in the state. And you'll be talking with Joe Spina, and I remember Joe from a while back.
Yeah, Joe. Joe used to. Joe's a former school teacher, retired. Does a cable show in Lynn. Well, frankly speaking, on Thursdays he did a talk show on WEFX years ago in the afternoon, and we recorded this interview that we're going to hear at the end of the program. Not today, but prior to today. But I think Joe's comments are completely relevant, so we're leaving it up there for later on in the show. However, since that happened, two candidates have dropped out of the presidential race, and I'm looking at some polls today, and I just to, because the things that I say in the interview, I'd like to take back. because I'm going to make this very quick. I know time is short, but I've looked at some polls today, and my thinking has always been, and I don't think I was wrong, that the candidates wanted to stay in to prevent Bernie Sanders, you know, because they felt that if they got out, their support would go to Bernie Sanders. Having said that, now it appears that there is a plot, there is a plan to stop Bernie Sanders, with the Buttigieg and Klobuchar both getting out of the race in the last 48 hours. And I'm looking at some polls today on Real Clear Politics, and I'll be honest with you, it looks like it's working, because what's happening was. Is that those candidates were taking votes from Biden, yeah. From everybody. If that would include Sanders. But again, let me just add that our Senator Elizabeth Warren, if she got out, I would think a lot of her support would go to Bernie. That's why she's staying in, if you buy into this massive plot, if you will. But already you see, like in California, if you believe the poll that's out there, I think 2 days ago, only two candidates would get delegates, and that would be very good news for Bernie Sanders. Right now, there are four candidates above the 15% plateau. The same in Texas. That's changed as well. Minnesota, this has to be a recent poll because Klobuchar is at 2%, but they also have four candidates that could get delegates out of Minnesota today. So the strategy that the Democrats just put in place might be working. I don't know how that plays out. But then you also have Joe Biden winning a bunch of southern states possibly today. Tennessee, Alabama, Arkansas, Oklahoma. And now even he's leading in Texas in the most recent poll. So it's an unexpected twist, I think, in the last 48 hours. And my interview reflects, I want to just, if you listen to my interview at the end of the show, take whatever I say and throw it out. But Joe's comms still very relevant.
All right, Bill, looking forward to it. It's going to be a busy day. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Bill.
And take good care of our polar bear, Rick.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Bill. That is Bill Newell, and he's our director of Mr. Everything here at MSO News Sports. We'll be right back with our first interview. We'll be talking with Karen Bell, who is the Gloucester chairperson of the Gloucester Democratic Committee. We'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back with our first guest this morning, Karen Bell, who is the chair of the Gloucester City Democrat Committee. And, Karen, welcome back. It's been a while since we've chatted here.
Yes, well, it's a pleasure to be talking to you and all of your audience.
Well, and Josh Arnold is here as well. And last time Last time we talked, I can't believe it's been 3 years. It was right after the presidential inauguration. So I guess, you know, there's been a little...
Yes, there's been a lot of news. And I think everybody, I hope that most Americans and, you know, people who, I mean, people who live in Massachusetts sometimes don't think the way the rest of the country does. But I hope everybody has at least now grasped the difference between campaigning and governing, and you know, because I think we've seen pretty vividly, if anybody's even paying attention, what the election of Donald Trump has done to the U.S. government, the federal government, and the in our system of you know, agencies that perform, you know, many many valuable functions, including keeping us all safe from things like the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. What's the status report of the Gloucester Democratic Committee? In other words, Karen, what is the role that that the committee is playing this year locally in terms of, you know, delegates to the convention and the convention itself and maybe the election itself?
Right. Well, we are the local unit of the smallest unit, official unit of the Democratic Party. We're called a city committee because Gloucester is a city. It has five wards, and so the five wards together elect members to each ward to each ward committee, and together they comprise the Gloucester Democratic City Committee. Other towns and such as Manchester, Essex, and Rockport, with whom we work very closely, are considered town committees, and they actually, you know, have a much lower number of approved members. So we actually can elect up to 35 people per ward.
Hmm.
So theoretically, I think right now we're close to 200 members, and every 4 years on the... In fact, today, our membership actually resets, meaning people who want to be members of the Democratic City Committee can sign a nomination paper, and then they appear on a presidential primary election ballot for every precinct and ward. So when people go to the polls today in Gloucester and in the other towns, they say, you know, I want to choose a Democratic ballot, and they look on the ballot, and, for example, if they're in my, you know, precinct or Ward 1, Precinct 1, they will see, or actually either of the two precincts in my ward. This is, you know, more granular than most people want to know, but they'll see, for example, my name and that of, you know, anyone else in the ward who wants to be a member of the city committee.
Okay. Today is obviously a huge day, a lot going on yesterday that I think came out of the blue. So what's your assessment on how things are going today or might go today? And what do you expect to Gloucester to – how much do you expect Gloucester to participate in today's primary?
Well, we won't know until we see the final count of ballots. But I think there was a lot of all over Massachusetts. There was certainly a lot of early voting and absentee ballots. And many of those people, of course, have already voted, and now their candidate has dropped out. So I think there will still be lots of people going to the polls. Something that people actually should be aware of is if they cast an early ballot and their candidate dropped out, their vote has already been counted, and it cannot be – they can't go and say, no, give me a second chance. But if, however, they cast an absentee ballot and the ballot hasn't been counted and they're somehow here – they theoretically could go to their polling place and say, you know, I want my ballot back. I'd like to redo.
Okay.
But that I think that's not going to happen very often. So right now we've got you know, probably a lot, a big turnout, I hope. You know, we'll find out tomorrow. But obviously Gloucester and the North Shore are, I think, you know, considered, you know, very active Democratic locations. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the state, all of the state candidates like to, you know, come here and talk to us.
Absolutely, yep. Well, I know, yeah. Senator Kennedy used to have a great relationship in Gloucester. I know that. Karen, is there anything else you'd like to mention on this Super Tuesday?
Well, just that I think the... Okay, Super Tuesday is here. It obviously is very decisive for who the final candidate is going to be, and that's because many of the delegates to the national convention in Milwaukee will be selected on the basis of, you know, proportional votes cast. So to get delegates to the national convention pledged, there, I think a candidate has to have about 15%, a minimum of 15% of a state's popular vote. So this is pretty crucial. I mean, and there are candidates, obviously, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, and Tom dropped out recently. And Pete Buttigieg and Amy have pledged to support Joe Biden.
Right.
So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think that people who are unhappy about, you know, the rules should at least understand that the rules haven't changed since after 2016, and so none of the, or at least the Democratic Party has no intention of changing the rules. So the candidate who finally emerges in, you know, in the summer, is going to be selected according to the rules.
All right, Karen, I appreciate your taking the time today, and good luck with everything that you do, and we'll talk again soon.
Wonderful. Okay.
Thank you very much, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is Karen Bell, who is the chair of the Democratic, of the Gloucester City Democratic Committee, and we'll be right back with another... What I think should be an amazing interview with Dr. Vern Walker of the Young Democrats in Massachusetts. We'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back now, and it's my great pleasure to introduce to you the Reverend Vernon K. Walker of the Young Democrats Committee. He is the Massachusetts Policy Director of the Young Democrats. And just to give you a little background, Reverend Walker attended Penn State. He's from Philadelphia, one of my favorite cities. Earned a Bachelor of Science degree at Penn State. After graduating, Reverend Walker attended BU's School of Theology and earned a Master's degree in Theological Studies. And during that time, Reverend Walker also cross-registered to take courses at Harvard's Divinity School on nonprofit leadership and took a lot of other... is still a student of the game, if you will. Reverend Walker, welcome to MSO.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Rick, and I'm so joyous to be with you.
I appreciate that.
Conversation with you here on Super Tuesday.
Absolutely, and, you know, looking at some of your accomplishments, the fact that you are a young man... so accomplished and very active and also working with respect to a vision of what good citizenship and maybe taking care of planet Earth is like. So I congratulate you on your efforts and want to take a look first, if we could please, of what the Young Democrats are in Massachusetts. What's the overall configuration and what is the vision of the Young Democrats?
Well, the vision of the Young Democrats is to engage young people under 36 across the state of Massachusetts who hold democratic values, who are interested in having a future with the party in regards to having a say in political matters related to the platform, related to their own community. So essentially, we are a group of folks, young folks, who the Young Democrats of Massachusetts is a part of the Young Democrats of America. And we're essentially a group of young folks who are politically engaged and socially conscious and who care about the heart of our democracy.
And your platform, you're able, well, in your position to speak publicly on these issues, which you've done in Boston, I see a great deal, and you have several things that are near and dear to your heart. I wonder if you might speak personally to how you got to be involved with the Young Democrats.
Well, essentially, when I moved to Massachusetts, I was very interested in the intersection of faith and politics. So originally, I lived in Worcester, Massachusetts, and then I ended up working for a city councilor out in Worcester. And that really was my baptism into the political experience here in Massachusetts. I worked for her, I interned for her, as a organizer in the district, and that was really a wonderful experience of seeing how everyday policy, even on a municipal level, affects everyday life for regular folks like you and I. So essentially, my interest stemmed from wanting to be more engaged around political issues, and because politics matters, and some people think that politics is just a nice fancy word, and it doesn't really have everyday relevance. However, it does matter, and it does govern our lives from day to day, if we whether we're aware of it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, I got involved, and I sought after one of the city councilors in Worcester. And Sarai Rivera is her name, and she's still District 4 counselor, and I had a wonderful experience working with her.
When you talk to young people, do you relay that experience? Because, you know, young people, for the most part, college graduates and so on, they're so focused on getting into a career, and a lot of them are worked to death by some of these companies. You know, you put in 70, 80 hours, but the importance of what you just said has to get across to them. And are you finding that there is more of, for want of a better word, more of grassroots activism?
Yes, particularly with the 2016 election, the grassroots activism has just exploded and has grown exponentially. And since the 2016 election, with Trump becoming the president, it has awakened the political consciousness of people whose political consciousness were asleep. It has enlightened, it has reinvigorated the political consciousness of everyday people. So more and more people are getting involved, more people are running for office on the municipal level, on the state level, on the federal level, et cetera, not only here in Massachusetts, but across the country. So I find that in this political environment, it's very rare that I run across someone from Massachusetts who isn't at least minimally aware of the politics that's happening in their city or town.
Well, and I also think that social media has just grown exponentially in that regard as well. People are so involved in social media, for good or evil, that mm-hmm. people are much more aware of what's happening. And the only thing that bothers me about that is, you know, I wish people would check their sources for actual real content.
I wholeheartedly agree with you, Rick.
All right, now, tell me a little bit about your thoughts and your observations of what went on yesterday in terms of the primary season, because prior to Super Tuesday, I mean, this was like a volcano that exploded last night and yesterday with the two candidates withdrawing. So how do you look at it as the policy director at Young Democrats?
Well, I have my personal opinion of a candidate who I support. However, looking at, these candidates dropping out, I mean, it's expected, that time gets closer and closer to the Democratic convention in Wisconsin this year, more and more folks are going to drop out. Now, there's so many different theories and reasons why Buttigieg dropped out and why Amy dropped out. But I think it's time for the Democratic Party to unite around a candidate. And essentially, it looks like it's going to come down to perhaps Biden versus Sanders, and it'll be interesting to see what the results tell us tonight into early tomorrow morning in terms of these 14 states, including Massachusetts, letting their voices be known and the voters letting their thoughts be expressed, because without a vote, a person doesn't have a political voice. So essentially, I think it's just going to continue to dwindle down the candidates in the Democratic field, and I think it's time to for the candidates not to assassinate each other or not get so caught up in attacking each other that we lose the bigger goal. We lose sight of the bigger goal. So I think that it will be quite interesting these next several months as the primary season continues to roll on. But I like the energy that people are expressing. For some people, there was a sense of doom and gloom, after Trump won the presidency in 2016. But the positive thing that has come out of that, I feel, is that people are now more than ever before politically awakened and politically engaged, and in large part that's due to the social media influence, because of such, we now see people who haven't had opinions before express their opinions. So I think this is quite an interesting time in this primary season, and it's going to be very intriguing to see how this primary season finally shapes up.
I think it's going to be an interesting few hours, never mind a few months, but I'm fairly apolitical. I try to look from outside, looking in. And I wonder, on in the so-called, what's the word I'm looking for? When the people get together and debate. Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
But the sniping that went on, I mean, is that normal in politics early on to try to, instead of going after the Republicans or Trump, a lot of the Democrats were sort of sniping at each other. But, and again, I'm not a student of the game. So is that fairly normal and then the party unites afterwards?
Historically we have seen that. We've seen in 2016 with Hillary versus Sanders, and sometimes it's like a sparring match,
Okay.
The primary season is just, a game of sparring,
Mm-hmm.
And it's oftentimes we like to tell folks it's not a sprint, it's a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
In order to, I guess, get the coverage that someone thing sells and is repeated in a news cycle. So I think quite is a commonplace for candidates to juxtapose what they believe against each other so they can present themselves as the best candidate moving forward to represent the party. Thankfully it hasn't gotten nasty, I would say.
Right.
But it is highly emotional, because this is a highly emotional time.
I think my final thought or question is, Reverend Walker, in your position as policy director at the Young Democrats, are you in communication? Do you talk with people around the country, either by phone or however, in travels or whatever? And if you do, what's the general sense of how Democrats feel this election season?
Well, I do talk to folks from time to time across the country, and some folks feel that that Sanders is too radical and Biden is too moderate.
Okay.
Some folks feel that Warren is too much of an idealist and not necessarily a pragmatist, not necessarily pragmatic. And for some folks, they feel that it's inevitable Trump is going to win.
Oh, boy.
But I said, well, no. I mean, no, it depends on folks being engaged and folks turning out across the state. You know, and I think these battleground states is really, you know, Pennsylvania, Michigan, the states that Obama, those two states Obama won in 12. But obviously Trump won those in 16. So I think people are feeling a mixture of excitement and anxiety. But I think by and large, people are hopeful that because of the antics of the last 4 years of the Trump administration, that folks who may identify as independents may come over and vote in favor of a Democratic nominee in order to restore sanity and tranquility in the world, so they say.
All right. Reverend Walker, man, I really appreciate your talking with us this morning. I hope that you will stay in touch, and if you have something you'd like to promote, please let us know. And is there anything else you'd like to mention before I let you go?
Yes, please get out and vote. Your voice is your vote. If you're in one of the 14 states today, please go out and vote. If you're not in one of the 14 states, please look up when your state primary is and make your voice your vote. And particularly here for Massachusetts voters, get them souls to the polls, you know, however you can go. You know, whether if you crawl or catch the bus or drive or bike, yep. however you got to go.
Yep, the weather's not an excuse today.
Yes, no excuse today.
All righty. Reverend Walker, thank you so much. Have a great day. And once again, thank you for talking with us this morning.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you, sir. You as well. Bye-bye.
All right.
That is the Reverend Vernon Walker, who is the policy director for the Young Democrats of Massachusetts. And still to come, John Ronan with Josh Arnold coming up here in just a few minutes.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
People come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality custom awards, screen printing, embroidery, and more. We pride our family-owned business on our exceptional customer service and quality products for the right price. Custom t-shirts, sweatshirts, warm-up suits, hats, along with the area's top trophies, plaques, glass awards, we are the one-stop shop for end-of-the-year banquets or advertising your small business through apparel. Come see us at Harrington Trophy, Chestnut Street, Lynn, or harringtontrophy.com.
The North Shore is listening to msonewsports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hey, this is Matt Williams from the Salem News. Make sure that you listen to our weekly high school sports podcast where you can get all the news and happenings in the North Shore high school sports and beyond with myself, Phil Stacey, Bill Newell, and Nick Giannino.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Connections, and it's my privilege to introduce our next guest, John Ronan, who is the host of the Writer's Block that is celebrating a 30th anniversary on local cable TV. John, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Glad to be with you.
Well, you know, you and I go way back. I had you actually as a teacher back when I was attending North Shore Community College way back then, and I remember that you were from Chicago and had a dog named White Sox. That's how good my memory is. But
I'm still a White Sox fan, Jack.
Good, good, and they actually won one finally within this last cycle.
05.
05, yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you about your show. I've watched it many times, and lots of great authors. Tell us about a little bit about your background, but then how you got into doing the Writer's Block.
Well, I was in Albany, New York, a long time ago, 89, 88, something like that, doing a show where I was interviewed because of my writing, a very casual atmosphere. On the drive back, I thought, well, maybe this would work in Gloucester on Cape Ann. And I went to Seneca Nagello, who was the director of Cape Ann TV then, and I asked her if she thought it would be a good idea. And I didn't even finish the sentence. She said, when do you want to start? And so I did. And we started taping in 1990, and the rest is history, as the cliche goes.
Yeah. Yeah, and how many authors have you had on? I mean, how many, you just do so many shows a year. How many authors would you say you've had?
Well, we've had 375 shows.
No kidding.
And yeah, and most of those are one author shots, but we've had a number with 2, 3, 4, and sometimes as many as 10 people. I haven't added them all up. My guess is about 700 people.
Wow. And the authors are not all Cape Ann people, but some of them are.
Almost always, yeah. Almost always. They are Cape Ann people. We've had a couple of celebrities on. Linda Paston, who is a former poet laureate of Maryland, and Michael York, the actor. Someone as old as I am. Maybe you, Josh, might remember Michael York.
I do, yeah. yeah, vivid memory, unfortunately, on some things. So
I want to point out to your audience that one of the celebrities we had on was you.
Yeah.
Arnold, you were a long time ago now. This is the 2004-05 season. I looked it up.
I did a book. I was a headhunter at the time, and I had Arnold Career Services, and I wrote a book called The One-Stop Job Search, and looking, but it was a pain in the ass kind of book to do. I said I didn't think I was cut out to be that kind of an author, and I'd much prefer to write a novel. If I could have had any career, I would have been a screenwriter. But I've been too busy with life that
It gets in the way, doesn't it?
Yeah. I wrote a couple of screenplays. One was called The Satrap Report that I've actually started to convert it to a novel a few times, and it sits in a file on my computer, and someday.
Well, I look forward to having you back on after the novel's finished.
Jeff. Yeah, yeah. So tell us a little bit more about you and what, I had you as an English teacher in college, and it was a speech class, and I needed an elective or something, and took that, and it was an interesting class, but what... tell us about your journey.
Well, I was teaching at North Shore for, I think, I lost count. I think it was 34 years. I'm retired now.
Yeah.
And pretty busy, keeping busy. All the organizations in town love to get a hold of professional people after retirement and before dementia. And you've got a few years in there of good sharpness. So I'm real busy. I'm gonna
remember that, and I'm probably gonna use that quote somewhere, whether I can attribute it to you or not. But I like that. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Okay, you're free to use it.
What? And so you came. You resided in Gloucester. Retired, and what keeps you busy these days besides the show?
Well, The show has been 30 years of fun, and I'm going to continue that at least through Gloucester's 400th anniversary. I am continuing to write. I've had a few books come out in the last few years. I'm working on another one that will be out, I hope, next year, 2021. And I continue to publish and write my own work.
Yeah.
Like you, you know, I've got a pile of projects here.
Yeah.
Got a couple plays, small plays, run off Broadway, and I mean way off, like Gloucester. And I'm working on a couple other plays. And involved with indirectly with some things like Poetry Without Paper here in Gloucester. That's a program for students that a friend of mine and I started in 2003. It's still going, and I'm kind of on the sidelines now, but I always go to the award events at the end of the contest every year. I should say that's a contest for poetry open to all Gloucester students from first grade to high school seniors, and they enter through our submission program, no paper involved, and it's been really, really good. We've had hundreds and hundreds of, I should say thousands of poems entered, and scores and scores and scores of winners over the years.
You know,
that's a couple of things I'm doing.
As a youngster, I grew up off of what's now Arnold Way, but it was Mount Pleasant Avenue area, and one of the kids in the neighborhood was Charlie Olson. And of course, his father was Charles Olson, the poet, who was a really a towering presence. He was a great big man, and I remember seeing him across the street, and I ran home because I was scared. But he was but I did a paper for him on him in like the fifth or sixth grade when I was at Eastern Avenue School, and I. You know, they let me go down to the house and go through his books and stuff. But I, even today, I found his works really challenging. How familiar are you with his works? And have you had Charlie on the show at all? Or
No. I think he was gone.
But no, not Charles Olson, but his son is around.
Oh no.
Okay.
No, I have not met him.
Okay.
Well, he is, as you say, he's an icon here.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he is challenging.
Yeah.
The jargon in poetry is whether you're accessible or not, or how accessible you are. He talks about cosmic issues, and they're deep.
Yeah.
So he's not going to be always too accessible, but worth the trouble to dive in now and then.
We had Lies Breen on our previous show a few months ago, or within the last couple of months. Have you talked to her at all?
Who is that? I missed that.
Lies Breen. She has done a lot of research and is writing a book, or has close to writing, finishing a book on the impact of the slavery trade on the North Shore.
Something's. Spell her last name, will you please?
Breen.
Breen, and she was.
Lies, L-I-S-E. Oh well, that's okay. Do we have you?
Yeah. Something's not ringing a bell. Is this the Florence Burke book?
I don't know the book. But she told some really compelling stories about how folks in Cape Ann benefited being part of the slave trade, whether it was shipping or owning the boats that shipped them in, or people who. People, prominent families in this community that kept slaves.
Oh,
and so
yeah,
forth. Yeah,
right.
And
yeah.
But it's just, I found it a very fascinating story. So you've got an event coming up this week, and it's about your 30th. Tell us about that, please.
Well, it is. It's the day after your birthday, right, Josh?
That's right.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Thank you.
This is going to be the taping of the final show of our 30th year. And because it's sort of an event, I arranged for the taping to be in front of a live audience at Cape Ann Museum, which is just about 200 feet down from our studio, actually, in downtown Gloucester, because we expect a pretty good audience. And I wanted to get as many former guests as I could, because this is all about thanking them for, for their energy and their continued work on in art and their talent. The job has been, well, it's not a job, it's just been fun all the way along, and I'm really, really in awe of the energy that people have on Cape Ann, and in different areas, up and down the North Shore, too.
Well, great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest and sharing. That was a sneeze that we tried not to get on the air, and we did. But anyway, thank you for being a guest on the Connection show, and wish you great success as you continue with the writer's block, and particularly with your 30th anniversary celebration this Friday.
Thanks very much. I'm really glad to have gotten your email and the call, and happy to be on the show, Josh.
Thanks, John. Take care.
Bye-bye.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill. At the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan, plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Looking to score big on your savings this season? Open a CD savings or money market account at Institution for Savings. This is the perfect time to earn funds for your future, and our rates are among the best. Stop by one of our offices in Amesbury, Beverly, Boxford, Gloucester, Hamilton, Ipswich, Middleton, Newburyport, Rockport, Rowley, Salem, Salisbury, and Topsfield. Or visit us online at institutionforsavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF. North Shore Today is MSO News Sports' daily local news podcast with news from all around the North Shore. The Post also shares a note on the weather, local photos, notices, and our video of the day. Check it out daily, North Shore Today. It's Super Tuesday, and joining us is the Super, Joe Spina. Welcome, Joe. Good to have you with us.
I didn't know I was super, but I'll accept it.
Absolutely. Well, that's why we're having you here, because we've... In fact, let's just call this day Super Tuesday for Joe Spina being with us here. How about that?
I like that. Yeah.
Well, let's give our listeners a quick little update. Joe's generally considered on the GOP side of things. We're kind of breaking down the Democratic primary here in Massachusetts, also looking nationally as well as to what happens on Super Tuesday. But, Joe, you also do a television show in Lynn on Thursdays live at 5, and that will be coming back this week, right?
It will be, yeah. We had a little hiatus.
And now it's back. Man, Joe, when have you been a man of few words?
Well, never, but you have to ask the question and then the words will come.
All right, so here we go. It looks like it's margin of error in Massachusetts. Sanders and Warren, of course, this is Senator Elizabeth Warren's home state. A Bernie Sanders win in Massachusetts would be significant for her fledgling presidential campaign, but how do you see this playing out, at least in Massachusetts?
Well, you know, I was mentioning the other day to one of my daughters that, in my view, Elizabeth Warren has probably performed best at the debates of anybody, consistently better. And yet, her numbers keep falling, and I was wondering why that's the case, and I think as I have the answer. Elizabeth Warren is not likable. She comes across as strident and unauthentic. And consequently, I suspect that she's going to lose in Massachusetts to Bernie Sanders because she has no credibility whatsoever. I mean, you know, I have a plan for this, I have a plan for that. Every other day she has a plan. You know, she reacts and she really doesn't, she's like a chameleon. So I think people have picked up on her. James Wood. Do you know James Wood, the actor? His comment on Bridget Lund, which I think rings true, is that listening to her voice is like hearing someone's nails going across a blackboard. And I find that that's said that she's very disagreeable. I mean, people just do not turn out to her at all.
All right, yeah, I hear what you're saying, Joe. But even with that, what would strike me is that a Democratic presidential primary in her home state of Massachusetts, that even she's at in the 20% range, even among Democrats. You know, that's the stunner here. But I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, do you honestly think that Elizabeth Warren has any core convictions?
I'm not arguing with you, Joe. I'm just saying that, again, I think it's stunning that the numbers in her own home state are this low. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, but I don't find that surprising. I think that's what I try to get across in those long words to the recent of being shot in three. And Bernie Sanders, people would understand what he represents. I mean, socialism is a very failed ideology. I mean, history is replete with failure, you know, socialist failure. So if this country wants to go socialistic, be my guest. I mean, that's a disaster. I think the Democratic Party is a disaster, as a matter of fact. And I'm not talking as a partisan. I'm talking as an observer.
Yeah. Joe, I want to go out nationally here with you here and get your take. Obviously, 14 states voting Super Tuesday. Bernie Sanders is leading in a number of states, and big states, too. I think you can put states like California, Colorado, Texas, Massachusetts, Utah in his column, or at least potentially in his column. Now, states that are on the bubble, if you will, or no states for him, Virginia, Florida looks like it's a no. North Carolina is a toss-up. Minnesota doesn't look like he's going to do well there. I haven't seen a poll on Vermont. Obviously, I think he's going to do very well in Vermont. But I think it speaks to, and the other thing, too, when I look at the polls with Bernie, Joe, and I want you to explain this to our listeners, is he's in the states that he's winning, he's got 35%. He's got 30%. He's got 27%. But he doesn't have 40%. He doesn't have 55%. So now it's a delegate hunt. And I think what happens after is that he won't lock it up on Super Tuesday. There'll still be some doubt moving out at Super Tuesday, but I'm just wondering, how do you see the delegate count playing out moving forward here?
Well, I think everybody's pretty much assured of the fact that no one's going to reach, 1991? Is that what the number is, the magic number? I think it is. And as a consequence, they look like they have a broken convention. And if that's the case, nobody wins in the Democratic Party. I mean, if Bernie goes in there with the most delegates but doesn't get the nomination, you realize that that's going to fracture the party. They'll never accept that verdict. And the other side of the coin is that if Bernie becomes a nominee, I mean, not one individual that won a rep seat in 2018, not one Democrat from that school of victories endorsed Bernie, not a one. Why is that the case? And they realize that, socialists are down, it's just going to kill the whole party.
Yeah, those are you're talking about the districts won by Democrats that were also won by Trump.
And when you talk about California, see, here's the problem. California, probably a million people have already voted there, or more, because they have early voting. Same thing happened in Texas. Probably 700,000 have voted in Texas already. And this is when Bernie was, ascending. Well, after what happened yesterday, that's not going to have very much effect. Do you follow me?
Yep, right, right.
So Biden is not sitting well. I mean, look, if anybody thinks Joe Biden could be president of the United States, they're out of their minds. I mean, in all of his races, this is the only one for president that he won. Are you aware of that?
No, I am aware. South Carolina is the only primary he's ever won after running for president many times, yes.
Exactly. So what does that tell you? That tells you that he's really not a viable candidate. I mean, he called Chris Wallace Chuck. I mean, he hasn't got a prayer. So the Democrats are in real problem. You know, they can't have Bernie, and they're not. I mean, the establishment Democrats don't want Bernie under any conditions. Biden can't beat Trump. Ever. I mean, it's not even conceivable that can happen. So their only hope, in my view, is probably Bloomberg. And I don't know if they necessarily want to coalesce around him, but you know, he can spend a ton of money, and I think he'd give Donald Trump a run for his money, to be honest with you.
I think the things to watch, Joe, as you point out, the bump that after the Saturday South Carolina primary that Biden could possibly get in possibly a big state like Texas, let's say it's possible. You're right. There's been a lot of early voting. Those things don't happen like they used to happen as far as momentum and bumps and stuff. But you still got to think there's a little bit of momentum. And so this will be the first time we've seen Michael Bloomberg, who you just mentioned, on the ballot with spending all of that money. And Joe Biden, after the primary win, his first primary win, the first kind of positive news for Joe Biden in a long time. And I, my theory is this, Joe, is that, you know, I tend to agree with you. I listen to some of these Democrats, insiders, and they don't mind a brokered convention because they don't want Bernie.
That's right.
And so now I think the best strategy is for the more candidates to stay in the race. And that is the strategy, rather than trying to solidify with one opponent against Sanders, because I don't think that's going to work. If it's one-on-one, I think a lot of the people that drop out, a lot of their supporters will go to Bernie. That, in other words, the strategy won't work. So I say that's
necessarily. Now think of it this way: Elizabeth Warren's numbers are not that good. I mean, even if you add her numbers to Bernie, that her constituency would tend to go to Bernie. Agreed.
Agreed.
Okay. But you mentioned something about Bernie at 25-30%, and that's about it. I think the ceiling that he has within the Democratic Party is maybe 40%. So the majority of folks that vote in the primary, even in the Democratic Party, are basically fairly conservative vis-a-vis Democrats, okay? And you just don't have anybody out there that they can go to outside of Bloomberg. Bloomberg, and because he has the money, and he gets the favors. Now, what is going to happen, and nobody's realizing, is that Biden is going to do extremely well in Alabama and on some of those other. I believe Arkansas is in the 14 states, right? Tennessee. So there are a number of southern states in which they have heavy black populations. Biden's strength is strictly within the black community.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's remarkable because none of the other candidates seem to have minority strength, which is stunning, I think, in 2020 for Democratic candidates to be positioned in that way. But Joe, let me counter that. Let me put an adversary, a different view on this. You look at Texas, for example. I'm looking at a poll right now. Bernie Sanders, 34%, and Warren at 10%. So you add those, let's say you add those together, boom, he's up to 40. Yeah, that's right, 44. And then you throw in a few others, a Buttigieg, and maybe some Klobuchar votes going to Bernie. That's going to happen. Now he's at 50%, you know, and now take a look at.
I don't buy that. I don't think the Buttigieg or Amy's votes do go to Bernie. I think they go to Biden.
No, but they would have gone to Biden if they. I mean, but Biden had a chance to get those votes earlier. Look at Joe. Sanders, 30% in a poll. Warren, 18%. So now he's right at 50% if Warren goes out of the race.
California is completely out of touch with the rest of the country.
Well, you know, you may be right, but they've got a lot of delegates. That's why I'm saying that's why I predicted that Elizabeth Warren was going to get a lot of money. In the last couple of weeks, because she is taking PAC money now because people want her to stay in the race when, you know, see if she drops out after the election, Super Tuesday. I'm wondering if she stays in. That's my theory.
What if she loses Massachusetts? She has no rationale to stay in. Agreed?
I agree with that.
Okay. And you and I both agree that she has a distinct possibility of losing Massachusetts.
I agree.
So I think that after Tuesday, and we can do a follow-up if you'd like, I predict Elizabeth Warren has no choice but to get out of the race.
There he is, Joe Spina. Joe, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for your time and, of course, your insights. Always good to hear from you.
Have a great one.
Yep. Joe Spina with us. And, again, you can catch Joe on Lynn Community TV live at 5 on Thursdays now. He's back this week.
And we'll be back on Thursday, as that takes care of the Tuesday edition of Connections. And I want to express my appreciation to our guest today, Karen Bell, who is the Gloucester City Committee, Gloucester Democrat City Committee chairperson. Also to the Reverend Vern Walker, who is the policy director at the Young Democrats of Massachusetts. And to John Ronan, of course, and to Joe Spina. And that takes care of that. We do have, I will be talking with Wendell Waters, who works at Topsfield, the Topsfield Wicked Local. But she also has podcast that she does nature stuff, and we're going to be talking with her. We'll have her on Thursday, and you have someone else lined up, don't you?
No, the person I had for Thursday is flying to Detroit, so we'll have him on next week.
All right, well, we will have the beer pod with Tim Kearns, and he will talk about spiritual unrest.
That's nice.
That's a craft beer.
I'll try to get a couple of taped interviews as a post-event on the Polar Plunge. I was not able to do that on the day because I had that foolish polar bear outfit on, and I couldn't see the recorder to work it right.
Got to get that polar bear some bifocals.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. Thank you, Josh. Thank you to Bill Newell and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, for Josh Arnold and all our staff at MSO. I'm Rick Moore. Go vote.